Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and good evening, my fellow Liberty lovers, wherever and whenever you're tuning in from. Today is Tuesday, April 9th, 2024, and this is episode 36 of the Living with Freedom Show. I'm Amber S., bringing you a vision of what living a life of freedom can look like physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and in every aspect of life. This show is brought to you by Living with Freedom Ministries, an unincorporated private church and ministry where I help people discover and fulfill their God-given purpose specifically through the creation of their own private ministry. Right now, I invite you to share this show with at least one friend by copying the show link. I had a typo there. Or sharing the social media post so we can get truth in more hands, because just like money in the hands of good people does more good, truth in the hands of good people does more good. Yes, I love that line. I might just keep it. As you'll notice, I'm still dealing with some residual coughing. Historically, bronchitis and respiratory stuff tends to linger for freaking ever with me. So I'm working on restoring my wellness via lifestyle changes to make it so that this kind of crud does not linger anymore. I have gotten myself better, and being around people who are not gluten-free and don't eat as healthy as I used to makes it difficult, because then I feel like I'm either having to do all the cooking or having to make two separate meals, one for myself or whatever. So it just gets to be really difficult. But sometimes you just have to draw the line and say enough is enough. I'm choosing my health and figure out how to make it work. And that's where I'm at. I digress. Let's jump right into the holiday of the day, because this is kind of the central theme for, honestly, the entire show. I'm going to keep circling back to the main concept of it, and so we'll just address it right away. And the reason I am picking the one I did is because I honestly didn't really like any of today's holidays. So I moved up and looked at, oh, sorry, I have someone stopping by to finish working on some repairs, so my dog might bark a little bit more. Hang on.
Please check out the Barefoot is Legal radio show right here on Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, that is 10:30 a.m. to noon Pacific Time, as we show you all about your barefoot rights and living a barefoot lifestyle. And for more information about the 501c3 nonprofit Barefoot is Legal, please check out barefootislegal.org.
Do you love the outdoors? Do you want to help make a difference for the planet? Then get involved in Collectively Rewilding. Collectively Rewilding is a movement to restore degraded ecosystems and reinvigorate sustainable traditions almost lost by working together. It's based on the idea that we can achieve more by working together than we can by working alone. Sharing the skill sets we have built over the years with each other and providing the community support we all need when there is so much work to be done in finding a sustainable future. To join our community here in Collectively Rewilding, go to www.collectivelyrewilding.com. Let's bring nature back into our lives in a community built for the wild in all of us.
Thank you guys for your patience on that one. Hopefully my dog is done barking. I'm working out in our ministry inn's office today because they're doing some, they as in like my mom and our workers, but they're doing some just cosmetic stuff back in my room to take care of a few things that needed fixing. And so I couldn't be in there. I do have the phones unplugged and turned off and muted, but Sometimes you can't control when, you know, a dog walks by and he can see it, and he likes to make it known, which I would rather him tell me that there's someone here or someone, you know, walking by than, you know, be surprised that someone's here. So he should be good now, though. Anyway, so I didn't like today's holidays. I moved it up to the National Week holidays, and I found that it's National Library Week. Now, I might seem like the biggest hypocrite because I did not grow up with a library, at least not a real one. When I was growing up, my tiny little hick town, when we had the original elementary school building, which was literally just K through, I think, one or two, our village hall had the best thing that they could offer, which was a single room in the village hall with a few bookshelves. And honestly, I never actually went there because my house, growing up, we had more books than the library did. But then when we got the new elementary building, which was K through six, and I started there when I was in second grade, we finally got a real library. But then moving over into high school and in college, I realized I hated being in the library to study or read because the random coughing and sneezing and paper shuffling and chair scooting was obnoxiously annoying for me. So while I read every single day, probably for hours at a time, including every single night before bed, I was not your typical library fan. And then cue motherhood or parenthood for the dads out there. Libraries offer a lot of cool opportunities. You get to explore a lot of topics that you don't necessarily have to shell out money to explore. And especially with kids who have ever-changing interests, it's kind of nice to be able to just check out a book or two or five or 10 from the library, knowing that in a month or in a year, their interests are probably going to change. And then all of a sudden you're stuck with hundreds of dollars potentially of books that your kid is no longer interested in, never wants to pick up again. So libraries can be awesome. They also often have story time and you know, reading opportunities and special speakers for kids, and also sometimes for adults too. So libraries can be super awesome, especially the community ones. They are also, unfortunately, a place that can bring a lot of controversy these days because of certain story times. And I do want to talk about that from a constitutional perspective for a moment before returning to the true purpose of a library. I would venture to guess, and I've not looked up the research on this, but I would venture, or the statistics, I mean, but I would venture to guess that most libraries are publicly owned, meaning the taxpayers pay for their existence. This means that they are public property, and freedom of speech for all is protected. Let me say that a different way. Freedom of speech is protected for all. Why do I emphasize this? Excuse me. We as liberty lovers must remember that as much as we might be extremely upset that libraries allow these special story times or adult content books accessible for kids, if we want our freedom of speech to be protected, we must also be willing to protect the free speech of those we disagree with. And this is not the same as endorsing. If we don't want those story times, don't go. It's that simple. But we cannot bring ourselves to be part of cancel culture and virtue signaling just because we see the harm, and because we're likely people of faith, we also probably believe that these events are based in sin. We must also remember that while our founding fathers were believers and we were founded on Christian values, our founding fathers also knew that to be a better system than England had, we need to protect the rights of all, as long as one's rights don't actually impede on another's rights. Now, no one has the right to not be offended. This is a very, very modern and recent creation. We do have a right to not attend events with certain content or to not require our kids to access certain content. But that must be the parents' responsibility, not the government's job to police content. Otherwise, that is the government acting on behalf of special interest groups, which we already have enough. Honestly, we have too much of that as it is. The government should not be acting on behalf of any special interest groups. Laws should be to protect the greater good of all, not special interest groups. And the only way we can do that is enforcing the Bill of Rights, really, and making sure that people who get butthurt, or our Karens or our snowflakes, whatever we want to call them, even though I don't like to call names, that's why I'm addressing the feeling, not the name calling as much. People who end up getting butthurt over a difference of opinion, they don't get the right to cancel others. We already get enough of that with social media and all these other things. Let's not contribute. If you've been a longtime listener, you've heard me mention that Chris Ann Hall is very adamant about this. In fact, this exact topic, she has had at least 2 podcasts on, if not probably touching on this concept at least 6 times, including in her Liberty First seminar that she teaches. Sorry, I do have a cough drop in. Sometimes it just rises up and gets me. But anyways, Chris Ann Hall is very adamant that if we don't fight for and protect others' rights, there will not be anyone to stand with us when it comes to an attack on our rights. So in regard to rights and liberties, we must stand arm in arm even with our enemies, our perceived enemies. Now, why do I feel National Library Week is so important? I do want to read a passage from the Founders Bible. I'm going to do my best to paraphrase as much as I can because it's kind of a longer passage and I don't want to get in trouble for copyright infringement. I want to make sure that this is like fair use sharing. So I guess I'm going to ask for forgiveness instead of permission. If it's too much, I guess we can edit it if needed. But I do highly recommend getting the Founders Bible. I want you to be able to read it for yourself and see what it says and be able to chew on it and just have it in your own hands. So this radio show is technically free. Like, you guys don't have to pay for it. You know, it's not like there's a subscription or anything. So it's not like I'm making money on this. So hopefully that means that it's okay for me to share a little bit longer excerpt. So I think what I'm going to do is share that reading before the break, and then we're going to pause for a commercial break, or at least the rest of the commercials. And where I'm reading in the Founders Bible is page 441. If I can turn to that page. Sometimes these really thin pages like to stick together. All right, I'm reading from page 441, and I have the heirloom edition. So I don't know if that's going to impact where it is in your version if you have a different one. But this article he includes in the Founders Bible on this page is called Here Am I, Unleash Your Children to Greatness. And it's in reference to 1 Samuel 3 and 4, or no, 1 Samuel 3, verse 4. And that verse says that the Lord called Samuel and he said, "Here I am." So basically making himself present and known. The main point of this article is that the Bible has countless examples of really young people who were doing big, massive things at a really young age. For instance, David was just starting his teen years when he slayed Goliath. And by that age, he had already slayed a lion and a bear. King Josiah was only 8 years old when he became king. Samuel was just a kid when God spoke to him first. And he was training to become basically like a priest. And that was the beginning of his ministry, was when he was a child. And of course, Jesus was 12 when, it says, when he confounded the doctors of the law in the temple in Jerusalem. And I love this. I love that the Bible in this context gives us a really solid example of rising to greatness. They're talking also about how Founding Father Noah Webster, he created a spelling book. And for 150 years, the spelling book was used in American schools. What I thought was the most interesting was some of these spelling words, you guys, were so unknown to me. And I love reading. I don't know if I can express that enough. Like, I'll admit, I was never a fan of Shakespeare. That older English was really hard for me until relatively recently. And sometimes I still struggle with old English, especially reading John Locke. That's tough because he is the prince of run-on sentences. But anyways, I wanted to share some of these words because I had never even heard of most of them. Let's see. Contumelious, ichthyology, bronchotomy, loquacious, that one I actually knew, mendacity, armigerous, oh yeah, armigerous, vertiginous, oleaginous, and acanthus. You guys, these were elementary words. Holy cannoli. I looked up some of these words. So armigerous, I think is how you say it. That one means basically to be the arms bearer. Armigery, I think is the base word, and that was arms bearing, essentially. Ichthyology, this is for any of you fishermen out there or fans of zoology. Ichthyology, so ichthyology. Ichthyology is really just the study of fish. I thought that was pretty cool. And loquacious is definitely a word y'all can use to describe me. Excessive talking. That's what it means. I am loquacious and I accept it. I own it. Anyways, I was just dumbfounded when I read that list of words. And that's just a sample of words in his elementary spelling and pronunciation and grammar book. It just blew my mind. And it made me truly realize how much we really have dumbed down America, that someone who is as passionate about reading as I am didn't even know these words, and I'm in my mid-30s. So that's a sad, sad thing. The focus I wanted to get to was a couple of these quotes and then really just sharing about what some of our founders have done or had done by a pretty young age. The article asks, why would Webster choose such difficult words? And it says, the textbook explained quote, it is useful to teach children the signification of words as soon as they can comprehend them. And the minds of children may well be employed in learning to spell and pronounce words whose signification is not within the reach of their capacities. For what they do not clearly comprehend at first, they will understand as their capacities are enlarged. And I underline this next part, that's David Barton writing. He said, history consistently shows that if we raise expectations, students will rise to meet them. But if we lower expectations, they will also meet those. So the more we, I guess I wasn't going to go there, but I'm going to go there. The more we adjust grades to make it easier to pass, the less of a service we're doing for our kids. Now, I'm a devil's advocate when it comes to the grading system because I do not believe in the traditional education system. Choosing numbers or choosing letters to represent someone's ability to function and succeed in the world is quite arbitrary. And there's a graphic you can probably find on the interwebs. But there was this little cartoon that showed a picture of like five animals, like a dog, a bear, a giraffe, a fish, and a monkey. And they were all standing in a line. And in front of them was a table with a sign that said, your test is your ability to climb that tree. How on earth is a fish expected to climb a tree? Or a giraffe or a dog? A monkey and a bear can probably climb the tree pretty okay, but all the rest of them are going to fail because the test was rigged against them. That is exactly how our public education system, the curriculum, the style of teaching, the style of testing, it is rigged against the way most students learn. And so they've had to dumb it down. They've had to adjust the grading scales to compensate. So instead of changing the system to match how kids learn, they're dumbing down the curriculum to make sure they all can learn these basics. And it does. It really upsets me. It upsets me that my child, because of the family court system, my child is subjected to that pathetic education system. all right, I should keep going because we're getting close to our commercial break. Let's see. John Adams was traveling, and he and Abigail were writing letters back and forth, and he was explaining that the education of their kids was never out of his mind. Like, he was always thinking about it. And he reminded her, quote, it should be your care, therefore, and mine, to elevate the minds of our children with an ambition to excel in every capacity, faculty, and virtue. If we suffer their minds to grovel and creep in infancy, they will grovel all their lives. Not even going to add comment to that one. He also added, quote, early youth is the time to learn the arts and sciences. The sooner, therefore, the practice begins, the more likely it will be to succeed. Your children have capacities equal to anything. There is a vigor in the understanding and a spirit and fire in the temper of every one of them, which is capable of ascending the heights of art, science, trade, war, or politics, end quote. I'm going to skip some of that. Here's another quote. Rabbi Daniel Lapin, was addressing the concept of adolescence and how it's a pretty modern concept. We raised children to be as functional as they can be as soon as they can be. So here's what Rabbi Daniel said, quote, the ever-growing void between childhood and maturity is what we call adolescence. However, the Lord's language, i.e. Hebrew, hinting perhaps at the deceptive and delusory nature of the concept, possesses no word for adolescence. It was the rituals and restraints of biblical faith that kept the fatal allure of adolescence at bay. In its absence, secularism encouraged the primacy of rights over obligations, thus helping to expand the boundaries of adolescence in each successive generation. I'm still chewing on that one personally. There's a lot to unpack with it. Here's where we get into the good stuff. And I am probably going to quote quite a bit here. I've skipped a lot in between those few quotes I've just shared. Just, again, to try to not, you know, infringe on copyright stuff. But David Barton here shares, gosh, probably about a dozen examples of people during the founding era and the successes they had and the things that they were accomplishing at young ages. It's just an amazing list. First, and no, I'm not going to number them, so we'll just start. Signer of the Declaration, George White, was 3 when he began a study of the classics. And we are going to look briefly after this list of what some of those classics were, because what they considered classics and what we consider classics kind of vary a little bit. So anyways, he was 3 when he began to study them. Signer of the Declaration, Benjamin Rush, quote, the father of American medicine, end quote, was 14 when he graduated from Princeton. Signer of the Declaration, Thomas Jefferson, was 9 when he began the study of Latin, Greek, and French. And at 16, he entered William and Mary College. At that time, it was common for American youth to be trilingual and enter college between 13 and 16. When signer of the Constitution, William Livingston, was 14, he was living as a missionary among the Mohawk Indians, one of the fiercest tribes in America, and at 18, he graduated from Yale at the top of his class. Now, I know there's some debate as to whether we should have been evangelizing anyone from another culture and essentially forcing our culture on them. I do believe that there is an ethical and respectful way to share about Jesus and one that is not ethical. I can't speak to William Livingston and what he was taught, how to be a missionary. So please don't come at me for that one. I'm only sharing what it said. Regardless of how he was a missionary, to be 14 living amongst one of the fiercest tribes, regardless of intention and integrity, it's still pretty impressive, at least I would say. When U.S. President Andrew Jackson was 13, he was serving in the Continental Army. During the American Revolution, at 14, he was taken by the British as a prisoner of war. And at 16, he was a school teacher. Wow. So in only 3 years, he went from serving the Continental Army, being taken as a prisoner of war, and then becoming a school teacher. When John Merritt was 13, he became the first Black American to evangelize Native Americans successfully. When Maria Mitchell was 11, she was a teaching assistant and studying astronomy. At 12, she helped calculate the exact time of a forthcoming solar eclipse. And at 17, she headed her own academy, training women in astronomy and science. Talk about girl power, you guys. This is the kind of stuff they don't teach us in our public schools, because they want us to think that without the suffrage movement, without women shattering the glass ceiling in the economy today, we would be subservient. But look at this. This woman, born in 1818, over 200 years ago, was 11 when she was a teaching assistant. At 12, I can tell you when I was 12, I was hating math with a passion and really struggling to to do well in math class because of a fourth grade teacher just royally screwing me over. And yes, I do blame her. Because of the way she did homework, assigned homework, it utterly destroyed any passion that I had for math. I've regained some of it now, but anyways, so this woman, Maria Mitchell, was 12 when she helped calculate the exact time of a forthcoming solar eclipse. And at 17, not even considered an adult by modern terms. At 17, she had her own academy training women in astronomy and science. And we still complain today that women, there are so few women in the sciences. That's our own freaking fault, you guys. Man, I'm getting a little passionate about it, but she died in 1889, so 130 years ago is when she died, and she was teaching women astronomy and science. So, y'all, we have no reason to complain and no excuses for the supposed glass ceilings, just saying. Next one, Louisa May Alcott, 1832 to 1888, the author of classics such as Little Women and Little Men, was writing poetry at the age of 8. At 13, she wrote a famous poem. At 16, a book. At 18, a novel. And at 19, her stories were being published across the country. When William Buffalo Bill Cody, 1846 to 1917, was 9, he was a cattle driver. At 11, he was a legendary Indian fighter. At 12, a trapper and a woodsman. At 13, a Pony Express rider. At 15, he was riding military dispatches. At 16, he was a guide and scout for the military when he became a Medal of Honor winner. Holy moly, talk about a success list. I had no idea Buffalo Bill did all this stuff. Like, I honestly thought he was like one of those, not Wranglers, but something like that, like a cowboy in the Wild West, which may or may not be ethical, moral. I don't know. I did not think Buffalo Bill was this amazing. I digress. Next, when Charlie Miller, 1850 to 1955, ooh, so he was 105. When he was 8, he was a Bronco Buster. At 11, he was a Pony Express rider, with each of his trips being a 10-day ride at breakneck speed, covering some 1,800 miles between St. Joseph, Missouri and San Francisco, California, fighting hardships, dangers, storms, Indians, and outlaws. Outlaw, that's what I thought Buffalo Bill was. And outlaws all along the way. Next, when John Clem, 1851 to 1937, was 12, he was a soldier in the Battle of Chickamauga. In the Civil War, he was promoted by General Rosecrans to the rank of sergeant for his exploits on the field, and General Thompson then promoted him to the rank of lieutenant. He was 12 and a soldier, and he was rising through the ranks. Let's see. When the famous sharpshooter Annie Oakley, 1860 to 1926, was 9, she was already earning a living for her family by her skills with a gun. Holy cannoli, you guys. Not only does the Bible give us plethora of examples of people we really should see as heroes at extremely young ages, our founding era is also loaded. Not even our founding era. Some of these people died in like 1955, 1926, not even 100 years ago. Our country's history should never be looked down upon in a negative way. There are parts of it that, in hindsight, yeah, we could have done better. Absolutely, I will never deny that. Because we do the best we can with what we have. Whether that's with ego, without ego, whatever. We do the best we can with what we have. But these people did amazing things and should absolutely be inspiration for our children. These are the kinds of people, you guys, that I would love for us to bring back having posters of in our children's rooms to show them that they can do anything they want. And if they have a goal, to go for it. And to not only encourage it, but really to embrace it, to almost make it an expectation to do big things because they are capable, because we all are capable. This is a message not just for kids. This is for us too. I'm just going to leave it at that. This is a message for us too. I'm going to pause for our commercial break, and when we come back, we will continue on this concept of National Library Week.
Looking for something different? Looking for something fun? Join Dan every Monday on the Freedomizer Network, 9 to 10:30 Pacific, noon to 1:30 Eastern, for Common Sense with the Educated Redneck, Dan Ellison, the show about everything and nothing at all.
Diana from Delivering the Truth and Exposing the Lies. Join Russ and myself every Thursday night at 7:30 p.m. until 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time while we deliver the truth about what's really going on in the world. You don't want to miss our show. See you then.
Hello, Freedomizers. I am Broccoli Man. When I am not fighting crime, I listen to the Proof Negative radio show.
I am the Wire Ripper. Not only do I forbid you to listen to Freedomizer Radio and the Proof Negative radio show, I am going to demand you wear a mask and get your naked body scan. We need to protect the one world government. You getting the real information hurts a crime syndicate. Do not listen to Proof Negative. You must now disrobe this instant so I can check your person for a constitution or cash money.
Anyway, listen to Proof Negative on Freedomizer Radio. Weeknights 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. 6 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time. Freedomizerradio.com.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever and whenever you're tuning in from, my fellow liberty lovers. This is Amber S. from Living with Freedom Ministries, reminding you to tune in on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Central, noon Pacific time for the Living with Freedom show, where we'll embrace what living with freedom can look like physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and in everyday life. That's 2 p.m. Central, noon Pacific here on Freedomizer Radio. Sorry, the second to last one got cut off on the .com part. There was a delay and then it like skipped sort of, so in my clicking. So I thought I had waited. And then I didn't, so sorry about that. I'm also going to share about Tuttle Twins because as we talk about National Library Week, you know, maybe order a set of Tuttle Twins books and get them into your local library. Tuttle Twins books and resources, they have a set of essentially like history textbooks. They also have these choose-your-own-adventure books that are very educational and, you know, lesson-based. The more I'm reading Tuttle Twins with my son, the more I am in love with them. So here's kind of the spiel on them. And this is my own spiel. From watered-down history, the intentional omission of important facts and principles to agenda-driven opinions, our children's public education is not giving our kids what they need to enter the real world and be critically thinking, problem-solving, non-history repeating adults. That's where Tuttle Twins comes in. They have an entire collection that's always growing for kids of all ages and for us adults who want to go back and relearn what we should have learned from the start. honestly, you guys, even if I didn't have a son or have a kid, I would probably have gotten these books for myself. Not even kidding you. Not even because I'm that big of a nerd, even though I am. I believe in their mission so much. I love their products. I love the way they present their content. I highly recommend them, especially for birthdays, especially for gift-giving holidays, or just really any time. Let's make gifting books popular again. I mean, when Harry Potter came out, those books, like, were coveted. And I was one of them. I am a Harry Potter fan. Come at me, please. I don't care. But let's make books fun again. And Tuttle Twins does that. So if you want to get yourself a collection of Tuttle Twins books or get your loved child in your life their resources and their books, I highly recommend it. It is so worth it, and I love their mission. Tuttle is T-U-T-T-L-E. So go to TuttleTwins.com/REF, like refer, R-E-F, /Living with Freedom. If you're a liberty lover and a freedom fighter, I also highly recommend taking the How to Win in Court Without a Lawyer course. It is vital, you guys, that we learn how to defend our rights for ourselves. No one is going to do it for us without having to shell out tens of thousands of dollars. And even if they do try to fight for us, they're not going to come at it with the same amount of dedication as we are for ourselves. So in every county, in every state, in your liberty-loving group, in your constitutional group, in your political party group, your book club, whatever you call your group, have at least one person in every single group take the How to Win in Court Without a Lawyer course. It is that important to learn how to defend your rights for yourself. I think every adult, even high school students, should take the course. Because if you feel you were unlawfully pulled over, like, there is no limit to what this can protect you with. He even has sections on family court, you guys. I haven't gotten into it yet myself because I'm studying like 17 different things all at the same time. I cannot wait to get to that section of the course. How to Win in Court Without a Lawyer. Visit howtowinincourt.com =refer code S as in Sam, H as in Henry, 0024. All right. Done with commercial breaks for now. I'll just do a mini one in a little bit. All right. Now that we read about these amazing people who did great things at a young age, do you guys remember my dear friend Sarah P., who we had on as a guest really early on in the Living with Freedom show? She is a prime example of raising children in the way they should go. She's a mother of now 6 beautiful children, and even the ones around my son's 3rd grade age are leaps and bounds ahead of my son and other public school age, you know, equivalent peers. And what I love most about these kids, they're literate, they're very adept at speaking clearly and respectfully and thoughtfully, especially with adults. Honestly, I would rather talk to her kids than with many adults because they're so deep and insightful. Why do I bring her up, especially so randomly, seemingly randomly? I believe there's a way that we can still love the youthfulness of our children and not keep them ignorant and bubble wrapped. We can love their creative adventurous nature that kids inherently have, which is why Jesus said, you know, have a childlike faith, you know, things like that. There is a beauty to it with the innocence. And we don't have to bubble wrap it and keep it ignorant. That innocence can still remain while also still raising our kids in the way they should go. They're not in opposition to each other. We can still teach kids truth and things like anatomy and intimacy in healthy ways that don't subject them to, I'm going to say CORN instead of the one that starts with a P, into that culture. We don't have to keep our kids in the dark about such topics, whether it's that, whether it's war, whether it's politics and civics. They don't have to stay ignorant just because they're innocent. So, I think I'm going to skip that part. It just doesn't feel right to address that in this show. So I'm going to skip ahead. All right. Based on what David Barton said about either rising to the challenge of higher standards or lowering oneself to low standards, I would argue that the children of the founding era really were probably more fully developed at a younger age than children today. Statistics say that children typically don't fully mature in their brain development until about age 24 to 26, so the average being 25. That also doesn't factor in the fact that we are exposed to so much in our modern day life. But with the founding era, and really before the technology era, I believe that children's obligation to help in daily family life, to study the classics, to learn multiple languages so early in life, and living off of the land in terms of not having the toxic exposure to synthetic chemicals day in and day out, I believe all of this caused their brains to be able to develop much earlier in life. They also didn't have the processed foods, or I should say food-like products that we have today, or all of the hormone disruptors, the neurotoxins all day, every day, like we have now. They ate real food because it was the only food. Let's get back to that. During the school year, I know it's hard, but this summer, make it a, like a get back to nature summer. Buy your food from the farmers markets and from local, you know, meat shops. See if you can go all summer without even stepping foot in a traditional grocery store. Or if you do, especially if you live in an area where food desert is a real thing, if you have to step foot in a grocery store, see if you can successfully shop just the perimeter regarding food. When we're studying health and wellness, it's an easy recommendation to study the perimeter of the store and not actually go into the main aisles, because the food along the perimeter, the things that are refrigerated, the things that are kept fresh, the things that are perishable, that's the real food. That's the unprocessed food that you really want to be eating if you're trying to be healthy and want to cultivate, you know, healthy neurological development and just health in general. So my first challenge is shop almost exclusively from farmers markets. Obviously, I would encourage, you know, growing your own garden too, but only shopping the perimeter of the grocery store. Yeah, there's going to be a transition in there. But see if you can do it all summer and then maybe don't go back. our bodies need this as a lifestyle, not as a detox, not as a cleanse, and not as, I guess, just like a holiday, a break. I don't know what you want to call it, but our bodies need this every day. We need to get away from the standard American diet and also the standard American products. I was watching this Facebook reel. Yes, I was doing the death scroll this morning. And this woman, and I've seen her before. I adore her. She's beautiful in that like natural girl next door kind of beautiful. And she was sharing how it's been over 70 days since she has used shampoo. And yet she didn't look like a grease monkey. In fact, her hair looked very clean and healthy and voluminous. And that's when I realized it's probably been almost a year since I've really used shampoo. Probably a little bit longer than that, in fact. I'd have to go back and look. But it's not that I'm not washing my hair. I'm using these other products that are plants that naturally take care of our health and wellness and regarding our hair and our scalp health. These pastes and these serums, my hair feels the way it did a decade ago. Now I'm, again, only in my mid-30s. Pregnancy was rough on me hormonally. I lost a lot of hair. My hair became very brittle. So I know that it sucked out a lot of nutrients from my body. And I can say that it has been over a decade since my hair felt this healthy. Last week, I even straightened it. And it felt so smooth and just, it was wonderful, you guys. So taking care of our health naturally is possible in this day and age. Yes, it takes intention. Yes, it takes dedication. But once you incorporate things like that into your routines, it will become like nothing. Meaning it'll become just as much of a habit as washing your hair was previously. But every habit, depending on who you ask, takes at least 21 days to 180 days. I've heard any number in between. So start with 21 days, starting one new habit. And then when summer hits, make nutrition the habit you're going to change with the farmers markets and the shopping around the perimeter. The other reason I bring this up is last weekend, or I guess last week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I had virtually attended a 3-day training on nutrition and mental health. The presenter did so much more than nutrition and mental health, though. Thankfully, 75% of it for me was about, you know, mostly refresher. But hearing it all presented the way it was in this stage of my ministry and my life, I realized how nutrition can be integrated into really nurturing our temple, our body, this meat suit that houses our spirit as well as the Holy Spirit within us, right? I don't love calling it a meat suit. I just thought it was kind of funny to insert here. But how nutrition nurtures our temple, that's the main point. And because of this realization as I went through that class, I'm going to start offering consults and education as a minister to honor and heal our temples as another way to live a life of freedom and support fulfilling our God-given purpose. Because if our temple is broken and in need of repair and dirty, it cannot help serve our higher purpose. It cannot help us serve God any better in a state of disrepair. So we need to heal and fix our temples. Part of this mission is going to be sharing about my own journeys, the successes as well as the struggles. I'm also going to be starting some personal lifestyle shifts. Many of them I've done before that I got out of, but I'm going to be shifting back to a gluten-free minus einkorn flour. Einkorn flour, I already know, does not affect me. What I might do is I may be doing a elimination diet where for 90 days I cut gluten entirely, as well as dairy entirely, just to kind of give my body a reset. I'm from Wisconsin. I love dairy. I will be much more intentional about the dairy I do consume when I start it back up. But I do know that I currently am eating too much, both gluten and dairy and sugar. So I guess not both, but all. I'm also going to be doing some kind of sugar detox, as well as working toward permanently eliminating added and processed sugar from my life and my son's life. I realize my son's life is going to be a little bit harder because he has another parent in another household and family that he lives with half the time. And I can't control that. So that's a whole nother obstacle. But for me in my life, I will be working toward eliminating added and processed sugar. I'm also going to be doing things like adding diatomaceous earth for a heavy metal detox and parasite cleanse. I'm going to be adding bentonite clay and coconut oil pulling for oral health and healing weaknesses in that arena. I'm going to be creating sample habit / ritual protocols to support mindfulness and holistic / natural means. And I'm probably going to be adding nutrition guides on a budget, knowing that both food deserts are real, and those of us who live in really rural areas, we just don't have that many options. I'm from a town of 500 people. We don't have a grocery store anymore. We have a Dollar General, but everything in our Dollar General is either processed and packaged and frozen or is shelf stable. We don't have any perishable, non-refrigerated items. When I say that, like, we might have some frozen vegetables. None of them are organic. None of them are non-GMO. Okay? So that's my hometown. And then 10 miles away, we have a Walmart and a pretty mediocre grocery store. They do the best they can, and I love them for that. But it's still not Sam's Club or Costco, or here in Wisconsin, Minnesota, like, the one I love to go to is either Festival Foods in the nearest town in Wisconsin, or there's also Cub Foods in Minnesota. That's pretty darn awesome. But in Wisconsin, the Sam's Club, Costco, and Festival of Foods, those are all at least 45 minutes away. Now, when I'm in Minnesota, I do have access to virtually every store, at least that exists in the area. So I may also put together guides based on that too, but really rural and budget lifestyle is my main priority. I'm also likely going to be offering libraries of resources. TTAC, TTAV, it's the Truth About series. There's several different ones. There's a boatload of nutrition summits and events, docuseries that I've attended. What I'll probably do is create sort of like a calendar of events and add their links as I come across them, as well as access to, like, purchase their libraries. I want to be ethical. I don't want to get their freebies and then turn around and give them as my own. So I'll be sharing resources to resources kind of thing. In addition to that, I'm also going to work on adding habit coaching, which is largely going to be based on Atomic Habits. If you've not read that book, highly recommend it. All of this is to help transition us to a more prayerful and purpose-driven life that's still so enjoyable and also starts to eliminate the brain drain things that only serve to keep us on our butts at home. What I mean by the brain drain things is TVs, gamings, you know, systems and cell phones. Doing things that support our temples, support our relationships, and support our environments, aka our homes. So if this kind of spirit-filled mentorship with nurturing our temples is something of interest to you, and if you'd like to help me test out some of these coaching or, you know, these consultation plans, please email me at amber@livingwithfreedom.org. In the subject line, put nurturing my temple. While I'm also working on sharing things right now, I'm just going to jump ahead. Be sure to email me also about the 12-week Sovereign Duty book study. That's going to be starting around April 20th. I realized I wanted to give myself and listeners a little bit of time to get the book, to kind of plan out their time. This is not going to be a thing where we meet at a specific time every week. This is going to be a little bit more independent study style where I'm sort of just the guide. Sometime during each week, I'm going to post a set of questions, a set of thoughts, ponderings, concerns, whatever. I'm going to post or email or share somehow something about the reading that week. When you get to the reading, use it as a reflection tool. You can engage on social media or via email, or you cannot. That's your choice. That's your prerogative. But let's do this. Let's study the Sovereign Duty book together. So if you're interested in that, also email me, also at amber@livingwithfreedom.org. You can get the book directly at chrisannhall.com in their official shop or from Amazon in either paperback or ebook format. So just letting you know about that. We're going to cut to a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back for the third segment.
Would you like to take your power back by following the principles of the universal laws, earth-based spirituality such as Kantianism, shamanism, and personal alchemy? Are you sick of giving your power away to power-hungry gurus, the corrupt government, the globalists, and realize you have a higher purpose on this planet? That you are gods and goddesses that need to snap out of amnesia and reclaim your birthright? We're Darren and Dr. Joanna Wells, the Double D, founder of the Gods of Amenti, psychic intuitives, transformation coaches, training others to uncover lost knowledge and reclaim their sovereignty. Here to guide you every Sunday at 6 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and Wednesday 4:30 p.m. to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on our show, Moving Beyond the Matrix, on freedomizerradio.com. Call-in number is 319-527-6208.
We talk a lot about the kingdom here, and we talk a lot about what most churches are afraid to talk about or don't even know to talk about, which is what the first century church was really doing. But just talking about it is not enough. We encourage everybody to join us in their local neighborhoods, in their local communities, to find out more about what they can do to seek the kingdom of God and His righteousness. Gather with others who are already starting this road or starting to turn around and do things differently. Join us on thelivingnetwork.org or at hisholychurch.org. Go to the network links or go to preparingyou.com. Join the network there. It's all the same. And we'll try to hook you up with people in your local area. They will not be perfect. They don't walk on water. They are not necessarily saints, but they are talking about seeking the kingdom of God and His righteousness. And join us on Facebook, facebook.com, His Holy Church, all one word. Join us there. We'll give you updates so you can start doing some studying and thinking about these things and start looking into these things for yourselves. But it's just not enough to sit and listen or to talk about or to say. You must become a doer of the word.
Since we've been talking about nutrition this show, I want to share about Elevea because I love what they're doing with natural nutritionals. Nutritional component called Ace Manin. I'm not the scientist. I believe it's a super awesome nutrient. And honestly, like, I wish I could explain it better, the science side of it. That's how my brain is. I love the how and why. What I do know, though, is when I use Elevea's products, I do feel more mental clarity. I do feel more alert. I do feel like my body is doing more of the things it's supposed to. So that means I'm feeding my body the things it needs to do its job. If you're interested in trying Elevea, which I highly recommend, they're a lot more affordable than a lot of those other supplement companies out there that are so highly processed and are not very clean, are basic just corporations that don't give back. I highly recommend giving Elevea a try. You can check them out at livingwithfreedom.myalovea.com. Alovea is A-L-O-V-E-A. So livingwithfreedom.myalovea.com. The other thing I wanted to share is I know I mentioned that I haven't used shampoo in a year. And then I also didn't share what I'm using instead. I shared about it. I didn't share exactly what it is. I use Tall Organics hair and skin products now. Along with coconut oil and apple cider vinegar and baking soda, you know, for the deep cleanse. But I love Tall Organics products. They're Ayurvedic based. By the way, Tall is T-A-H-L. The owner, Coriel, she's one of my friends. And that's not the only reason I endorse them. I happen to love the products and I also happen to know her. Yeah, I don't endorse things that I don't use personally and don't love. And that's something I want you guys to know. Like, everything that I mention on this show as an endorsement, as an affiliate, or a referral, I have used or am using. I never want you guys to wonder if I'm only doing this to make money. It's not it. If you try a new restaurant in town and you absolutely love it, you're going to tell your friends about it. This is how I do, like, affiliate and referral marketing. If I've tried something and I feel like the world needs to know about it, I'm going to share it. And it's totally up to you if you want to use it or not. It's up to you if you choose to listen to the show or not. You know, it's choice. Anyways. I love Tall Organics. I've been using them for pretty much a year now, I think, and have been really happy with it. And Coriel is really communicative, really helpful with explaining things if we have questions, whatever. She gave me a 20% discount code that you guys can use for first-time buyers. If you go to tallorganics.com, T-A-H-L, organics, and it is .com, right? I think last time I messed it up. I think I tried to say it was .net, but it's not. It is .net, but .com works too. Anyways, Tall Organics, just search it, T-A-H-L, Organics. You can get 20% off by using Amber20, A-M-B-E-R-2-0, at checkout. So I definitely recommend it. Mother's Day is coming up. They have so many things that are very specific for women, and it's just luxurious, and it's just lovely. Lovely is a great word for it. All right. We're going to come back to the show now here, and Let's see, where did we stop off? All right, I did not hit the word of the day yet. I really need to do that. And then what we're going to do is we're going to share a little bit about what the founding fathers considered the classics. And then if we have time in the next 20 minutes, we'll also touch on the lyrics that we were touching on last week. So, first word of the day. Not a fun one, but I thought it was interesting the way, you know what, this is old. We don't have a word of the day today? I messed up big time, you guys. I messed up. Technically, I did share some words from the Founders Bible regarding Noah Webster's spelling book. So today, you know what? Look up ichthyology. How about let's just do that, and loquacious, and acanthus. Go look up those words and use them once today, especially loquacious. That one's an easy one to use. All right, we're going to skip ahead then. I cannot believe I missed the word of the day. Oh, well, we'll survive, right? I'll give you guys a break since I usually overdo it. I wanted to find some examples of what our founding fathers were studying in their classical education. So I think I just searched, what were the classics the founding fathers read? Really kind of basic search question. But one of the first ones I found was from memoriapress.com. So Memoria is like Memorial, like Memorial Day, without the L, memoriapress.com. And this article is called The Classical Education of the Founding Fathers, and it was posted January 9th, 2020 by Martin Cotran, I don't know how to pronounce it, Cotran, that's how you spell it. Anyways, I'm just going to kind of hit the highlight reel. It talks about how Alexander Hamilton was expected to have a mastery of Greek and Latin grammar. He was expected to be able to read 3 orations from Cicero and Virgil's Aeneid in the original Latin, and be able to translate the first 10 chapters of the Gospel of John from Greek into Latin. Thomas Jefferson learned Latin, Greek, and French. He also studied law. James Madison had already read Virgil, Horace, Justinian, Caesar, Tacitus, I don't know how to pronounce that one, Lucretius, Phaedrus, Herodotus, Thucydides, I don't know that one either, and Plato. Let's see. It looked like there was a whole lot more, man. Where is that list? Okay. It said the typical education of the time, which we would call a classical education, began around age 8. And students who went to school were required to learn. It wasn't optional. Learning a second language for most kids today is optional unless you want to go to college, and then it is required for like a year or two in high school. But no, learning Latin and Greek was required. You also had to read Roman historians like Tacitus and Livy, Greek historians like Herodotus and that Thucydides, and then translate Latin poetry of Virgil and Horace. I love this. It said a formal education also stressed the seven liberal arts, grammar, logic, rhetoric, as well as arithmetic, geometry, astronomy, and music. Wow, you guys. Our founding fathers, like, They all had to study music. They all had to study grammar and Latin and logic. Grammar, logic, rhetoric, arithmetic, geometry, astronomy. I'm a little surprised to see astronomy in there. I'd love to see the justification for that. Here's a quote. I don't know where it's from, but it's on this website, so technically it's from this website. It says, in order to become like those we admire, we must not only admire them, we must do what they did. How beautiful is that? Man, this is why I'm sharing this, you guys. This is why I'm sharing about the classics that our founders read. Because if it benefited them, heaven knows it'll probably benefit us too. This is the kind of stuff we need to know so we don't repeat history. I love that there are people publishing new content all the time. Books, articles, novels. What if we went back to basics, though, and studied the classics before we went to modern literature? How would that shift the way we see the world? How would that shift the way we engage in the world? And also, how would that shift the way we digest other content, like modern literature? I think having these solid foundations in these seven liberal arts is probably a really solid foundation. I would love for us to get back to this. Did you notice in that list of seven, there wasn't social studies, there wasn't CRT or any of those other alphabet soup things with that kind of stuff, CRT-based stuff. There was none of that. They studied logic. They studied rhetoric. And if you don't know what rhetoric is, we're gonna dig into that word, because I think it's really interesting to know some of those kind of things. Why is this link being weird? If I don't have dyslexia typing. Not making fun of people with dyslexia, but I just inverted some letters. Sorry. Rhetoric is the art of effective or persuasive speaking or writing, especially the exploitation of figures of speech and other compositional techniques. What I see in that is a little disappointing, using the word exploitation. Now, exploitation does not necessarily mean the negative use. It could just be the use. But knowing that exploitation has a negative connotation. Rhetoric is a way of using speech to be persuasive. This is where we often get into logical fallacies. And I know I've touched on logical fallacies in the past. I'm not going to dig into them today. But as we analyze every public speaker, we should be keeping them in check, making sure they're not using logical fallacies. Especially in the news, some of the biggest ones you'll see are appeal to authority or circular reasoning. There are a lot of others, but those are some really common ones and very easy to detect. As we move forward, you guys, in the technology era, let's not forget about rhetoric and logic and grammar. These stupid cell phones, I'm going to say it, these stupid cell phones of ours and messaging and texting has all but destroyed our communication. And I say that because I have friends. And I love them. They're lovely people. But the way they text is almost undecipherable. it's very phonetic instead of correct spelling. So if you're trying to read it out loud, I guess it could be readable. But from someone who respects language as valid and important, not simply a means to an end, but to create mutual understanding, it sometimes almost feels like it physically hurts me when I see people not having the same kind of respect for language. We can do better, you guys. Teach kids that using a period at the end of a freaking sentence in a text is not aggressive. It's simply saying, this is the end of this statement. Point blank, simple. And that using capital letters, not all caps, I'm not saying all caps, but using a capital letter at the beginning of a sentence is also not aggressive. Using exclamation marks is not aggressive. Let's make sure our kids learn cursive and punctuation, grammar and logic and rhetoric. Heaven knows our schools are not teaching these things. Let's maybe do a summer program for our kids. I know they're not going to be super happy with us in the beginning, but let's make sure that they're learning not only that they can write, but how they can write. And not only how they can write, but how they can write effectively. That's my pedestal. That's my hill to die on for the day. Let's use National Library Week to check out one of the classics from the library this week and read it either with our kids or read it just for ourselves. If you don't know where your local library is, maybe that's step one. Figure out where your local library is and get a library card. And then talk to your loved ones that you live with and make it a date, whether it's a mother-son date or husband and wife, whatever, make it a date. It could literally just be 5 minutes on your way home from work where you're stopping at the library and just put your finger on a random book and check it out. Or you, like I said, pick one of these classics. I think it's really wise that we get back into supporting our local libraries. Make sure that they are well stocked with quality classical content, not just modern literature. I'm not saying they shouldn't have Harry Potter. In fact, personal opinion, I think they should have Harry Potter. I loved it. It was a fun series. And none of us who watched Looney Tunes ever became violent or ever thought we could jump off a cliff or get an anvil dropped on us and think we could live and survive. It was comedy. Where was I going with that? Oh, Harry Potter. We can still have make-believe be make-believe. Personal opinion. And if you disagree, that's your prerogative. I respect that. And that's why we shouldn't be squashing others' rights to free speech. Because you wouldn't want me pushing Harry Potter down your kid's throat. And I don't want you telling me I can't have Harry Potter, you know? I'm using that as an example because it is a topic of discussion in especially Christian circles. So I use that one as a really easy example because a lot of Christians don't like Harry Potter because there's magic in it and technically killing through magic. I get it, and I also know it's make-believe. That's a whole nother conversation. I'm not going to dig into that one today. Check out your local library, you guys. Plan to go Whole Foods this summer. Email me if you're interested in a Nurturing Your Temple consult or program. Email me if you're interested in the Sovereign Duty 12-week book study. Those are the things I'm going to focus on right now. Let's see. We're going to just do a wrap-up because we're only about 5 minutes till the end of the show. We started on time. I do want to mention, next week on the show, we're going to have special guest Sean on the show. He is my friend and one of my very first PMA members that I drafted a PMA for. He is going to be on talking about his healing ministry. He's also going to be sharing some key differences between the modern allopathic medicine system versus the original natural medicine system. He's also going to be sharing about much more. We're going to have a great discussion. Great person. He's out in, let's see, I think it's Washington. Yeah, I think the Seattle area. So if you are out in that part of the country, definitely tune in because it's going to be easier for you to potentially work with him and be a member of his ministry than it is for someone like me. My only option would be, you know, virtual, which can work, which is totally fine. That's why we have technology for things like communication. Just know if you're local to him, you know, tune in, see what he's got to share and share with your friends. I'll be getting a graphic out here as soon as I possibly can. And tune into next week's show. Today we talked about National Library Week. We talked a lot about some adjacent topics too. Some of it was rather ranty. Sorry, not sorry. That's my way of using rhetoric to share my message. And I know that it resonates with some people. It will not resonate with everyone. And I am not meant to help everyone. Everyone is not my audience. And I respect that and I love that because if we were all the same, life would be so boring. If we all liked vanilla ice cream, there would never be a need for chocolate or mint chip or strawberry or Rocky Road or whatever. Our differences is what makes us unique and beautiful as humankind, as human nature. So I love it and I respect it. Let's see. What else did we cover today? I think I already covered a lot of it, so we'll do the wrap-up or the end of the show stuff. If you would like to sponsor the Living with Freedom show, either as a private anonymous sponsor or through publicly through a notice during one of our breaks for what you offer to the Liberty Living community at large, please email me at amber@livingwithfreedom.org, subject line sponsorship. FYI, I use the word notice here because in public commerce, the equivalent of a notice is a commercial, but in the private domain, we don't engage in the traditional public American commerce economy system, but we can and do provide notice to men and women at large. I think that's another way that language is so fascinating. So if you'd like to become a sponsor of the show or just Freedomizer Radio overall, let us know. The Living with Freedom Church and Ministry thanks those of you who help support the ministry's activities so we can help, again, bring truth and liberty to more kingdom citizens. This has been episode 36 of the Living with Freedom show. I'm your host, Amber S. from Living with Freedom Ministries. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Remember to schedule this show in your calendar every Tuesday from 2 to 3:30 Central, noon to 1:30 Pacific. Thanks again, and we'll see you guys next week where we continue to explore what living a life of freedom looks like physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and in everyday life. See you guys later.